Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And now that call in on any other news story you've been paying attention to this week while we've been obsessing on Elliot Spitzer. Our lines are full now at 212-433-WNYC, but you can go to our comments page and add to it at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And don't just call or post your boilerplate beliefs about the world. You know, Bush is a war criminal, Clinton's a monster, Obama offers false hope, or whatever it is for you. Tell me something I don't know. Tell your fellow listeners something they don't know about something in the news this week other than the Elliot Spitzer scandal, okay? It can be from your own block. It can be from overseas. It can be from the arts. Just tell everybody something we don't know. And while your calls are coming in and being taken by our screener, one bit of comic relief from the demise of Elliot Spitzer, and I see that actually the first comment on the comments page right now catches me in this. Some of you will remember that when I got back from vacation last month, I recounted the recent litany of infamous leaders who my vacations seemed to have brought down. Let's revisit that show. I was on vacation when Saddam Hussein was captured in 2003, when Jim McGreevy announced he was a gay American and resigned in 2004. I was on vacation when Sandra Day O'Connor unexpectedly announced her retirement in 2005, when Karl Rove announced his departure from the Bush administration in 2007, and now when Fidel Castro released power in Cuba after 50 years in 2008. So infamous beware, I will take time off again soon. Yes, I said infamous beware, I will take time off again soon. And that was just a couple of weeks ago. Then on Monday this week, as Monday's show was ending, I said this. Tomorrow, I will be off for one day. Amy Eddings will be sitting in. Her guests will include NPR's Scott Simon. I'll be back Wednesday. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Less than 2 hours later, the Spitzer story broke. I canceled my other plans and did do the show on Tuesday, but now we know I only need to threaten to take a day off for the infamous to meet their demise. But now a call in on any other news that you've been paying attention to this week while we've been obsessing on Elliot Spitzer. Maury in Greenwich Village, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Maury.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to remind you and listeners that today is the one-year anniversary of the death of auxiliary police officers Jean Marshalek and Nick Picaro. I'm a member of the 6th Precinct Auxiliary down here, and I knew them both and worked with them. And it was a tremendous loss, and I'm still kind of broken up about it.
I can hear. And you wanted to acknowledge the anniversary. And I think people will remember that case. It was such a shock. Do you think that anything has been learned from that, or any changes with respect to protection for auxiliary police officers has been instituted in that year?
You know, we were issued vests as of the middle of the year. And they are the same vests that police officers wear, the regular police officers wear. But, you know, Nick was wearing one that he had bought himself. He was hit with 6 bullets, and only one hit the vest area. So that didn't do him a hell of a lot of good. And Gene didn't have a vest on. He was struck in the neck. So he bled out right on the street. Mm-hmm. And a vest wouldn't have helped him. And, you know, just in line with that, the vests are bullet-resistant. They're not bulletproof.
Right.
But I think it has raised awareness of the fact that there is an auxiliary program, and that I think we rank as probably one of the fourth or fifth largest police forces in the country, mm-hmm. because there are about 4,000, 4,500 of us right now.
Maury, thanks for raising
one other thing. There is tonight a march from Houston and McDougal Street to Sullivan and Bleecker, and it's a memorial for them. It'll be at 9 p.m. tonight.
9 p.m. starting at, again, the intersection?
At Houston and McDougal Street.
Thanks a lot, Maury, and I'm sorry again for your loss.
You.
Maria in Riverdale, you're on WNYC. Hi, Maria.
Hi. I just wanted to let everybody know about a victory march that a coalition, a community members called Community and Unity held on Wednesday for the failed Hunts Point Jail plan.
Now, tell us about this Hunts Point Jail plan and why you didn't like it.
Well, the group, we're just opposed to any, you know, jail expansion program. You know, we feel that jail expansion is not the answer to the problems in the jail system, and that a lot of the overcrowding is due to arrests and jailings that could be avoided through alternative incarceration programs. And so we feel that if more monies and, you know, more planning were focused and put toward alternatives to incarceration, that would alleviate the big problems that, you know, they say they're having with the current jails.
Maria, thank you very much. Doris in Edgewater, you're on WNYC. Hi, Doris.
Hi, Brian. Good morning. I was shocked to see on British, the BBC program yesterday, and they showed a tent village outside of Los Angeles where people were living who had lost their houses due to this mortgage thing. And it was like seeing white Darfur. And I did not see that on any other TV program, news program. I didn't see it in the paper.
Gosh, and I haven't seen that yet. What does it look like?
It looks terrible. I mean, these were all tents, little tents, where people were living, and they were going to their local church to wash up, to use the facilities, and to get food. Some of them were living in their mobile homes that they still had. I guess they had a mobile home besides their home, and they couldn't afford even to drive their mobile home, and a lot of them were out of work now because they couldn't get to their jobs.
Are they asking for anything in particular to be done to house these new homeless?
I don't know what they're asking for, but obviously whatever they're asking for, they're not getting.
Obviously.
I mean, they haven't cleaned up Katrina, for God's sakes.
Absolutely. Well, that's what I first thought of. When you said Darfur, I thought, well, maybe, but it certainly sounds reminiscent of Katrina.
Yeah, very much so. It just broke my heart, and I thought, this is not being shown on CNN, MSNBC.
And you saw it where?
I saw it on the 6 o'clock BBC News.
Mm-hmm. Doris, thank you very much for calling us. Always a great newscast to watch that BBC America. If you have cable, do you need digital cable to get that? I think so. If you have digital cable, check out which channel on your system has BBC America, and they have an excellent evening newscast. Gibbs in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Gibbs.
Hi, Brian. It's sketchy news. However, good old NPR had a very good report from Tibet, primarily Lhasa, of 24 hours ago. There was apparently major riots, with the monks being rounded up and the place being locked down, and no communication or very little communication, which suggests to me that if they shoot one monk, I predict there is going to be holy hell with respect to China and the Olympics, and I think it's going to be a huge, big story.
I know that some of the people who are calling this the Genocide Olympics are, since it's obvious that the U.S. is going to participate, President Bush has even said he's going to go there personally.
Well, he should consider not going.
One of the pushes is going to be to get Americans to not watch. Now, I don't know how successful that's going to be, but, you know, they're going to say if we can't get the officials to boycott China on the basis of their support of Sudan, then we're going to turn over their heads and go right to the American public and say, don't watch, and at least try to harm the ratings and therefore the income of, is it NBC? I think it's NBC.
Well, I have another suggestion, which is, it is stuff like this and about 14,000 other problems that the candidates for both parties should start to get involved in and stop this crazy, stupid bickering of nonsense and talk about the issues.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because our next segment after the news, as we continue to catch up on things we missed when we were obsessing on Elliot Spitzer, will be silly season in the Democratic presidential race and how the campaign is becoming about itself now rather than the issue. So we will follow up on that next hour. Gibbs, thank you very much. And Alan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Alan.
Good morning, Brian. Two things that may be related to the Spitzer resignation were very little covered this week. First of all, U.S. Attorney Christie from New Jersey had given a sweetheart contract to John Ashcroft, now in private practice, to perform some supervisory activities, $52 million, I believe, and he was called to speak at a hearing the day on or before Spitzer had to resign. So the New York Times had to relegate that story, which deserved the front page, to an inside page. And related to that, the Congress was suing the White House to get access to documents from Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton regarding the U.S. attorney scandal last year, and Gonzalez politicizing that office. So all of these things that may be related to the timing of the Spitzer investigation and the politicization of the investigation were themselves hidden by the Spitzer scandal.
Ooh, now there's a broad conspiracy theory you're getting at here, that the timing of the leak to the New York Times about Spitzer had something to do with Ashcroft and Gonzalez?
Well, think back to the Lebanese barracks bombing and the following week the Reagan administration going into Grenada to bury that story. It seems very much like that.
Well, thank you very much. By the way, as a few people are pointing out, there's also a BBC newscast weeknights at 6 on Channel 13. Maybe that's the one that the listener was actually watching, since she said it was on 6 o'clock. And I believe Sundays at 6 on Channel 21, the other public television station. But there is also a BBC America channel and a newscast. I don't know if it's the same one, actually, that Channel 13 runs or not. But for those of you without any cable TV at all, you can see BBC News at 6, Monday through Friday on Channel 13, and Sunday on Channel 21. David in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, David.
Good morning, Brian. I've waited for years for such an open invitation since you said, tell us something we don't know.
That's right.
I have precisely what you don't know.
Okay, good.
I'm an intern, as board certified in internal medicine and preventive medicine both. And since 1999, I've had a website up with the good help of my son to tell the public about something they really ought to know, but they won't find out in our economy.
It is supposed to be something we don't know from the news we missed during this week.
Well,
but I'll give you a short amount of time to tell us about
it. Let me tell you what it was. In South Oregon, a newspaper article appeared this week, which was entitled Old Drug, New Use.
Okay, I apologize. You've got your news hook. Go ahead.
And the subheadline was, Naltrexone in tiny doses shows promise in treating autoimmune diseases. As a matter of fact, that's quite true. It tells a story. There's an online piece showing a picture of the family and the fellow who has been taking it since 2004, and it stopped progression of his Parkinson's disease. As low-dose naltrexone has stopped the progression of every autoimmune disease that it's ever touched.
Is this a pharmaceutical produced by a pharmaceutical company?
That's right. It's a generic drug that in the early 1980s came to market at the request of the U.S. government for heroin addicts at 50 milligrams. That's naltrexone at 50 milligrams for heroin addicts, and in subsequent years was accepted for use in alcoholism as well. But it turns out a brilliant friend of mine who worked here in the city government, Dr. Bernard Bihari, discovered that if you took one-tenth that dose at bedtime, no side effects, no toxicity, it simply upregulated your immune system in
all
a
right.
very wonderful way.
Well,
what it did is it doubles and triples your endorphins, and all autoimmune diseases, multiple sclerosis, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, so forth, are all based on a weak immune system. The minute you strengthen it, the body's immune system stops attacking its own. And so no clinical trials were held until a study was published by Penn State just last year saying how remarkable it was for people with Crohn's disease.
Sounds like good news. David, thank you very much. Ronald in Williamsburg, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ronald.
Hello. Awesome show practically all the time.
Thank you.
Halliburton's subsidiary, KBR,
mm-hmm.
Hello, Brown Root,
yeah.
In the Boston Globe, March 6, has about 25,000 people employed in an offshore shell company just to avoid Medicare and Social Security deductions. According to the Globe, several hundred million dollars worth. And this all happened while KBR was still a subsidiary, active subsidiary under Halliburton, and while Halliburton was still run by Cheney. So the previous caller, Alan,
mm-hmm.
about burying stories. I mean, I heard Gates recently say that I stopped worrying about coincidences when I left the CIA. So, I mean, you never know, but sounded very You know, the Spitzer story was at least very convenient too, because you know, Social Security and Medicaid payments to avoid those is, I'd say, at this day and age, with the troubles we have, something to be considered.
Right. Thank you very much, Ronald. And with KBR being an Iraq contractor, I'll also mention that we were going to include developments in Iraq. Things aren't going quite as so well now as had been and has been sinking in to the public as, you know, the surge is working. There have been more deaths of U.S. soldiers as well as others in Iraq this week, and we're going to pull that out and do a big Iraq segment next week, which is also the fifth anniversary of the war. But Michael in Jersey City is going to get our last word because he wants to dispute a little bit of the premise of that tent city in L.A. story. Michael, you got about 20 seconds.
Okay, great. Thanks. Good morning, Brian. I just wanted to say that I also saw that segment on BBC World News. It was a great segment. I don't want to diminish the tragedy of the story, but it seemed to me a little odd that it came on the heels of a story about the subprime mortgage debacle. But however, the journalist could only find one person in that tent city that had been made homeless as a direct result of that. So,
it wasn't a tent city of the foreclosed upon. It was of homeless people for various reasons. And you're saying only the one from a foreclosure. Thank you. Thanks to all of you for calling with stories that we missed while obsessing on Elliot Spitzer.